The one thing that I know in the time that when I was at the protest and he was there was how hard he worked. You know, worked exceptionally hard. And leading World Cups, leading up to World Cup, you stop, no drinking. Like 6 weeks before that, a couple of months before that, no drinking, just works damn. All he was interested in his entire career was a gold medal around his neck, which was a World Cup gold medal. You know, there's so many times I've got two medals at home, that's his when he got man of the match, and he just left it there to see, you know, says, nah.
Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brook.
Right, so we're here with a legend of South African cricket, one of the gentlemen of the game, let's call it that. A legendary player, coach, and now administrator again. We'll get into all of that. Vincent Vinnie Barnes, welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket, my friend.
Hey, David, thanks for inviting me.
Who's David, by the way? Why are you calling me David? This is natural. We are together in this.
Okay.
How are you keeping?
Yeah, good. Busy. Just finished a big competition, and now it's reviews and starting to prepare for the next season, Volume 3.
So you tried to go into semi-retirement, but cricket never allowed you to go. Tell us what you're up to these days.
Yeah, so 2023, I had to retire from Cricket South Africa. I was then a performance manager, retired. I was aware that I wasn't retired, so I had time to prepare for it. Sort of at that same time was launched an academy myself in Nashville and a foundation. So that was going to keep me busy. I was doing a lot of private coaching as well until I got the call. I was playing golf, in fact, and got a call on a very, very windy day. I could hardly hear who was still calling, but I saw it was Graham Smith.
So you answered.
And I said, Graham, let me call you back, because I couldn't hear, it was very windy. And I actually forgot to call him. And I called him the next day, and I said, yes. And he said, Vinnie, can you come and see me? And I've got something I want to run past you. And I said, okay. Went the Monday and met with Cookie and Graham. And they asked me if I would be keen to restart this competition that now Cricket South Africa was running this T20 competition, Coca-Cola T20 was called.
Yeah.
It ended in 2019 when Coke pulled out, and then it was COVID, so you know, it was struggling to restart it. And now SA20 had got involved, and yeah, they wanted me to, if I became to project leader from their side, you know, and obviously collaborate with Cricket South Africa, and I said, well, I'm retired, but I'm available. So yeah, that's
school's competition.
That's the school's competition. Yeah.
I mean, that was a strong competition back in the day. So
very strong. Yeah.
And it's obviously, it's an important part of development in and the pipeline of South African cricket.
Yeah. I remember Niels Momberg when he was a youth coordinator. Youth and tertiary manager back then. He loved that competition. But unfortunately, you know, it's an expensive competition. And with Coca-Cola pulling out, it meant, you know, there wasn't a budget for it.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of the protests that are playing now, you know, a lot of them played in that competition.
Yeah. And when you see these youngsters playing and almost like we were discussing in the previous episode, almost like semi-professional, if you want to call it that, the intention and the ability of these youngsters and the professionalism that they have in their own personal games. Are you excited at the talent? Are you nervous? What do you see when you see all the talent coming through?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, for the 12 years leading up to my retirement, that's what I was doing. Sort of looking after the pipeline in Cricket South Africa under the Proteas. And, you know, always had a keen eye for talent. And just looking at this competition, which has grown now. The past 2 years, we've had it for 2 years now, the schools. And, you know, the players coming through the system, you know, it's fantastic to see that. And how some of them have now been picked up as rookies, you know, in the main competition, the SA20. So, it's such a great opportunity for these young these young boys and girls, and you know, and they're getting the recognition, especially, you know, our finals, which is all over SuperSport at the moment. Yeah. So so they get a lot of exposure, and yeah, look, as like I said, it's some of them are going to be some good talent coming through.
Does it take you back to when you were first looking at, you know, talent developing and seeing the youngsters like a Dale Steyn, Morne Morkel coming through? Is it that same excitement which drives you?
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Dale Steyn, which was quite a hell of a story. Dale Steyn, the first time I saw him, you know. But when you see something special, you know, you see, especially as from a bowling point of view, yeah. You just know there's something special there. Mm. And I saw Dale. He was, I was then running a National Academy, and we were playing a 50-over game against Dave Nodsworthy's Northern's Academy, and Dale was playing for them. I think he bowled about like 15 no balls or something, but it was quick.
Yeah.
It was quick. I was very impressed with his pace. He's come from Palaborva, so after that, I arranged another game against Noz's academy, and I said, please bring Dale back.
Mm.
And so Dale came to the game, and Dale had his thick lips. So, oh my word, what's happened here? And he goes, they don't want me to play. And I said, what happened? He said, no, he was at nets, and the ball got hit back down the net, and he went down, and it off the mat or something, okay. It in his mouth. So
yeah.
I said, listen, unfortunately, you can't bowl like that, looking like it. You gotta, you know, it's because he's absolutely thick. Yeah. And but that's the first time I saw him.
Mm.
And so now it was, you know, I'm going to keep my eye out for this guy. Similarly to when Gisa Rabada came back from the under-19 World Cup.
Yeah.
And he walks into the indoor nets because he's now going to, and I look at this guy and I go, and I watch him bowl and I go, there's something special here. You know, so that's, and just looking, a lot of these young cricketers playing now in the tournament, the schools, SA20, you know, there's a lot of young cricketers, you go, wow, yeah. And guy taking 5 in 5, and I can't get this guy. He's on my case weekly.
Yeah.
So, you know, because he just wants to get better and better. And
he wants knowledge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. And the fact is, I mean, a lot of the times these youngsters are coming through, they want instant gratification. They want that instant SA20 deal, the instant IPL deals. They don't want to, you know, you've got to temper that a little bit, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, I mean, it's these, you know, the odd cricketers are going to come through and get recognized and get the opportunity, like some of the young players have got rookie contracts.
Yeah.
You got a player like Luandre Pretorius, who's playing in under-19 cricket, but also goes and plays for the Paroks and does what he did, you know. And that's so their pathway is a lot quicker, similarly to a Rabada. You know, but not even, unfortunately, the game, there's not enough opportunities for everybody to come through. It's like this conversation I have with the National Academy.
Mm.
There's 15 players, they're sitting there.
Mm.
They're all looking at, you know, this is my path to stardom. And unfortunately, I have to tell them that, unfortunately, not all of you are going to make it. Mm. But, you know, it's all in your own hands.
And something that is really interesting in South African cricket right now is that we all know that the domestic structure needs to be, I think most of us believe that there needs to be a change. You know, I was very disappointed in the domestic season this past season, purely because I find that the unions themselves don't, obviously there needs to be support from, there needs to be a whole round support of domestic cricket, but there needs to be, I feel like everyone needs to get in a room, basically, and say, how are we building these youngsters up? Because that's the only way our youngsters are going to get to SA20 level, pro tier level. Domestic cricket still has a massive role in production of talent. There is, for me, and there's nothing more important than a youngster coming through after school, playing a four-day game in flippin' Potch or in Free State, and you bat a youngster who's a star from school cricket coming in, and Dane Pitts on the other end bowling to you. You know, that for me is like still, there's still an importance to that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, look, I mean, it's unfortunate that, you know, at times when you look at the season, the past season, there's a lot of international cricket. I'm going to use Titan as an example. Titans had to really dig deep into their reserves.
Yeah.
You know, they lost a lot of players to the national side and to South African A side.
Mm.
You know, and you can't always plan for that.
Yeah.
You know, because when you do your contracts, like everyone's doing right now,
mm.
you know, this is your players coming through. You don't know that, mm. you know, Blues, this guy's going to be playing for the Proteas mm. and for an extended period, you don't see him mm. all season. Or there's an SAA tour and all of a sudden like Titans in a 4-day competition struggled initially, you know, couldn't win a game, but they had to dig deep into the reserves and it's something that you can't always plan for that. But the competition itself, you know, you're right. I believe that, you know, we've got to understand that our first class or list A, those competitions are so, so important to the pathway of players to the practice.
100%. List A cricket wasn't obviously around when you first started playing, right? You started playing cricket when it was just red ball cricket. And take us through, you obviously played in the apartheid era of cricket in South Africa. Your name was synonymous with cricket, but it didn't get the coverage as much as some of the white cricketers that were coming through at the time. You played in the competition called the Howa Bowl, which was the domestic cricket tournament for non-whites. Take us through that era, how that was. We're going to bring up your stats and we'll put the stats on social media just so that there is proof and belief of these stats, where you've taken 280 odd wickets at an average of 7 in first class cricket. Like, those are ridiculous numbers. Just take us through and give us a bit of insight into what was going on at that time in cricket in the country.
Yeah, look, I actually started quite late. I mean, when I say late, I always liked playing cricket. I played cricket in the streets with everybody in the parks and stuff like that. I only really started playing for the club when I was 13 years old.
Okay.
But I knew the game. I loved the game. Mm. We weren't exposed to videos and TV where you could watch a lot of cricket. And so you basically got to watch, you know, we played in the morning as juniors and then go and watch the seniors play in the afternoon. So you basically got to take in as much as you can.
Mm.
We weren't coached. We had sort of, our chairman would be our manager and he'd look after all the teams. And so there wasn't a lot of coaching going on. And then I think when I was 16 years old, I was playing an under-16 match. And after the under-16 match, I got asked to play in the third team, which was my first senior game. It was quite interesting. Mm. And then played in the third team. And then by the end of the season, I was playing in the first team. So as a 16-year-old, I was playing under-16. Then I've gone to playing in the third team. I played a couple of games. And then I played a game for the second team. And by the end of the season, I mean, I'm sitting in a change room now with grown-ups. And I'm 16 years old. And I'm sitting in, like I said. But now it was the opportunity. You know, I wanted to learn about this game. I wanted to learn a lot more about bowling because that was my skill.
Mm.
So it was a lot more about taking in what people were telling me and not physically coaching me.
Which club was this, by the way?
Victoria Cricket Club.
Yeah.
So it was quite interesting. All they were interested in, because I had pace, was, look at here, you bowl fast. Don't ask questions. I'd be given the red ball. At the start,
one job.
They say, yeah.
Mm. Do your thing.
Go for it. Kill somebody. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Our captain was, captain back then would say, Vinny Mark, do it. and that's all I knew. I mean, I would just bowl fast. And most of the games, the captain declared, didn't let me bat. I said, guys, we knew I'd bat. He said, no, you're not going to bat because those are going to come and they're going to kill you.
Oh, Dale Steyn actually spoke about this, where the fast bowlers would come for him. He didn't actually enjoy the batting. He'd always, that's why he came out
on
the on guard all the time.
I remember we had to follow on.
Yeah.
And we were 9 down and we declared. And we followed up. Then you're not going to bat those guys. And those, I remember the game because we were playing as Primrose back then. And they were very, very strong. I mean, for years we struggled as Victoria to beat them. Mm. And they had probably had 6-7 provincial players in the side. And they said, Vinny, you can't bet against these guys. Uh-huh. These guys will kill you.
Dale Steyn said actually that the fast bowlers were always trying to get out the AB de Villiers and the batsmen, but they were trying to kill him.
Or injure him. No, look, I mean, that's, but it was kind of interesting. And then, you know, I was 17, turning 18 when I made my debut in the provincial side. So something, another thing, it was very new to me.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm now sitting, the guys in the change room are the guys I'm playing against.
Mm.
But they also, a lot of them are my heroes. I mean, they...
Just name some of the guys that you would...
No, so the Majid brothers, the Rushdie and Saeed, they were unbelievable cricketers. These guys are all now in the change room. Lefty Adams, he was a captain. So here I'm sitting in this change room now, and I get given the ball, new ball, and Lefty Adams was a captain, came to me, gave me the ball, etc. He was off in concert. He said, right, Lighty, you don't take a wicket in 3 hours, you're off. So I'm like, oh, okay, let me try. 3 overs, 0 for 6, off.
Oh.
So, like, wow, okay. Didn't bowl again in the first innings. We were playing EP out in El Cidro and playing against EP, and EP were very strong. Second innings, same process. Got 3 overs, bowled 3 overs again, no week. But I got a second spell.
Mm.
So, and then I got a second spell. And when I got the ball, the ball was red and pink. So I didn't know.
Yeah.
What was going on with this ball? So I'm holding, this is how I got taught to hold the seam and right. And when the rough is one side, the ball swings that way, you know, this is what, but now all of a sudden the ball's going the other way. So you go, geez, what is that? And it's like a couple of weeks later, a couple of games later, I was chatting to one of the Ghulam Ali, who was playing in the provincial side of me. I said, Ghulam, I need to understand what's going on here. What is this? You know, you know, I get a new ball and I know I could swing it, so it swings away. And as it gets, obviously it gets older, it still keeps swinging with the rough, you know. But then it reaches a point where it swings the other way, which is today we know it as reverse swing.
Yeah.
And so we discuss this. So we know how to get the ball into that condition. We know how to I was now learning how to control the ball. Given it now, the ball's reversing now. Okay, give the ball back to me so I can clean up.
Yeah.
So we understood it, but we didn't understand the science, the reverse swing science. And it was quite interesting. We now got involved with the Proteas, and we were talking about the art of reverse swing and the theories behind it. There was a lot of theories behind it. And I said, guys, I bowled with this ball. Let me tell you. This is what I needed this ball to be. This is the condition I needed this ball. You know, I mean, myself and Anton Ferreira were coaches of South African under 19 side. And my first tour as a South African under 19 coach was to Pakistan. And our bowlers had no clue about the reverse swing. Where every bowler was playing against us in the Pakistan side knew exactly what to do. So we had to, before we went to Pakistan, we had a camp. I remember Bob Woomer coming to the camp and talking to us about the conditions. And we had to teach him to bowl we had to doctor the ball, obviously, and get into ball reverse swing and to understand how to bowl with it, you know, and to understand how to, when the ball is now in that condition, you know, what to do, what side we'll look after. And so a lot of, just coming back to my provincial career, a lot of it was, I was learning as we were playing.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't somebody coming, and like today, I mean, you've got
apps, you've got everything at your...
You go to coaches, you know, you come after the game, you said, I wasn't feeling good, just going to have a look, you sit in front of a laptop, and you go through the whole process, and you say, okay, try this or try that. And it wasn't like that. So, but there was a lot of unbelievable cricketers around me, which I was, and I'm grateful for, because not only at my club, but in the provincial side, looked after me as a young cricketer. guided me.
And what is the competitiveness not like amongst the clubs? I mean, there was a kind of everyone was in it together because you were playing in an excluded league. But there must have still been a massive competitiveness between the clubs. Yeah. It's still alive today, you know?
It is. Look, I mean, Primrose United, Montrose, Ottomans, Victoria, you know, the rivalry between the clubs was huge. It was massive. I mean, we couldn't beat some of these teams. So playing for Victoria, we couldn't beat. We just knew Primrose were way too strong.
Fake David's been?
That was before Fake Davids. Okay. I'm talking about when I was a lot younger. That team was just too strong. We couldn't. I had to go and play in the soccer tournament. Believe this. I had to go play in the soccer with my club. It had made the finals it was called the South African Soccer Federation club tournament. We'd made the finals and we were playing in Kimberley on the Sunday. But we were playing two Saturday games. So it was two Saturdays against Primrose. League decider. Massive game. So our boys have now shot off to Kimberley to play in that final. And the club has come to me and said, listen, we want you to play this final. But I'm also involved with the football match. The club said, listen, we'll fly you Sunday morning, you fly to Kimberley and you can play in that afternoon game. So it was quite interesting. So, I mean, I took 14 wickets in the match. It was a crazy game. We won. This is really the first time we had beaten Primrose with that strong side. And we'd won the league now for the first time. So I'd taken 14 wickets. I think it was 9 for 14 and 5 for 10.
that is unreal.
Well, 14 for 24, actually.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I read somewhere that the Howard Bowl played, there was an era where you played unprotected wickets. Just explain that.
Okay, so I never ever played a provincial, and some people believe that, some people make these comments that to be played on mats. I've never ever played a provincial game, always played on turf. A lot of our club cricket was played on turf. The latter stages, when I grew older. Initially, it was a lot of them were playing on mat, which was dangerous at times. So when it's unprotected, you're playing on neutral venues. Unless we're playing, let's say, Elfindale, there would be covers there. Okay. We're playing at Florida Park, which is out in Ravensmead. There would be covers on it. But when you go and you play a provincial game at Rocklands, which is playing, there's no covers there. Okay. So you play a 3-day game and there's no covers there.
Sure.
So you would play them and just come the next day and then prepare the next day.
Yeah.
It didn't rain, but you know, the covers were basically, there was no covers.
Yeah. Lovely to be a batsman in that area, huh? Yeah, no wonder you're big buddy.
It was tough for some of them. It was tough. We get
if
to
you
the
were
ground.
A good batsman, and you we, were a really you know,
we,
good batsman.
We knew where our customs were. So when we played against, when the Transvaals and the Natals came down here, when they came to the ground, they see the green tap and they knew it was going to be a 2-day game. Although it was, you know, it was a lot of some of the games were obviously bowler friendly.
Yeah.
There was a lot of excellent batters.
Yeah.
And
I think
I've been asked this question so many times. When you've coached at the highest level now, you've seen people all around the world. What do you think about the players that you played with or played against with in that era? And I'm telling you, if given the opportunity, so many of them would have kicked on and become world-class cricketers.
Some names that
some of the players who I played with, I just mentioned two of them. Some of the players that I played with at Stuart Hendricks is a very good friend of mine. He's now in Australia. Mansoor Abdullah, probably one of the most stylish batsmen. The best batsman I think I saw or played against was Yakub Omar from Natal. Those are just some of the... But there was a lot of excellent cricketers who I feel that, you know, given the opportunity today, if they were playing today in their prime, you know, they'd be playing international cricket.
It must have been tough to not be bitter in with your era, to not have been given the opportunities that the other part of South Africa were given and world-renowned, etc. How difficult was it to, when you were part of that transition in South African cricket, during apartheid and then post isolation period, you had a choice to make. You could stand and be bitter, or you could actually go, I've got a future in South African cricket and I want to contribute as a coach. Just tell me your mindset at that point of your life, where you were and what made you go, I want to be part of the solution rather than the problem.
Yeah, so in the period that I was playing prior to Unity, I knew quite a Richie Ryle was a client at the bank of my ex-wife. So she mentioned it one day to me, Richie Ryle's always on my case about you coming to play for them, you know. I think you should have a Tech Mutual or something. So, you know, we had situations like that where we were lured, you know, don't do anything. It was never going to happen. You know, this was prior to Unity, play on the other side. It was never going to happen for me.
Gotcha.
You know, I was strict with my principal. I went through a tough school you know. We had just come through the, you know, 76, 77 riots, which was hectic. When I say hectic, it was, you know, people lost their lives. The school I was at, Livingston, you know, was one of the schools that was targeted. You know, we couldn't even talk about marching. And the Caspers would be all the way down Lansdowne Road. So the type of people around me at the time, which I'm grateful for, the type of teachers we had there, the type of family I had at home, you know, they were very strong in their beliefs that this is what it's about. And I had to learn about this because let it make sense to me.
Yeah.
Well, what you're doing. You know?
Yeah.
Why can't I go and watch cricket at Newlands or soccer at Artlevel? Why? Explain to me why. You know, so, and that gets explained. So now I understand why. So, okay, fine. I make peace with it. I'm not going to do that. So Unity came and was interesting because, you know, it was now an opportunity. I mean, we had no choices. Now we all played together, and it gave me an opportunity. And let's see how I can perform. Look, I was 32 years old, so sort of on the other side of a career. And but it still gave me an opportunity. I played quite a few provincial games. I played a lot of Bench and Ashes games.
Yeah.
And did actually quite well.
Yeah.
And then a couple of, yeah, my career finished just before I started coaching in Western Province. Made it, guys, stop picking me, I'm done.
Did a number of the cricketers from your era in the Howell Bowl make it through to some of the provincial sides, or was it just a handful of guys that came through?
Yeah, it was unfortunate because I thought a lot more cricketers could have been given opportunities. Western Province was very strong at the time. Doing at Western Province from a cricket union, very strong. I mean, very strong. I mean, Capes and all those guys were playing it. And so we had some of the younger players, Fike, Nazim White, T.L. Kemp, Ismail Bahadin. These were guys that were now a lot younger than me, that had come through and were performing at provincial level. So here was opportunity for them now, because they were a lot younger than me. But they didn't, except Faik obviously got some game time, but the others didn't really kick on. And so it's a bit unfortunate because I felt that, but we also, I mean, the Western Province team was very strong. I mean, I played in the Bench and Ages in 92, and the World Cup was on. The World Cup, I mean, after the World Cup, boys all came back.
Yeah.
Some thought, right, look, that's me, I'm done. Yeah. You know, I'm done. And Gavin Fuel was the convener selectors. Yeah. I came home with one article, and mom said, Gavin Fuel is looking for you. But I had already accepted, listen, Matthew, I mean, all the international cricketers,
Caper,
McMillan, these guys were all coming, Pring, they're all coming back. And so, I mean, me and Stephen Jeffries were opening the bowling. So I thought, that's me, I'm done. Got a call, my mom said, Gavin Fuel's looking for you. I called him and he says, I need you to play. We're playing in Transvaal at the Madras. Okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. Gives us a 12th man. And my roomie.
Oh, my word. Okay, that explains a lot then, okay.
Yeah, he was my roomie. He was also a 12th man in the game. So played there, actually. And then we played the second leg here at Newlands. I took 3 for 18 in my 9 overs, which was, and they got us in the final, and we lost in the final to Kepler Vessels EP. But it was Oliver Strong, Mr. Clarkson.
No, we've spoken to Caper and we've spoken to Schultz and we had Dave Keller on. That era of cricket must be. I mean, we grew up on that era watching you guys, seeing you guys. I always remember even. I mean, I worked with Faik at Cape Cobras a few years ago, but I was the kid getting his autograph outside the change rooms there at Newlands, you know, back in the day, and he was like a hero to me. So that era definitely was a special era. I want to just break away for a couple of seconds, but we'll carry on the stories because I feel what's going to come from this box in front of us will. We'll bring out some great stories. We're in April. Takealot, our partners of the podcast for this past month, have partnered with Cancer to create awareness on testicular cancer. You know, throughout the month, every single box that's been delivered to everyone, every package has been sent to people ordering on Takealot. There's an indent on the side of the package. And we always, you know, we get excited when it comes to checking our Takealot packages, but as men, have we actually checked our own packages lately? So we encourage on our social media, we're putting up all the details of how you can check your package in 10 minutes. Early detection, we had a great chat with Dave Callahan, who's obviously a survivor of testicular cancer, on the effectiveness of early detection. So please, men, go out there, check your package. We run through everything on socials and do your thing. But I want you to open this box, Finn. I don't even know what's in this box. Anything could come out of here. And I want you to talk to me about a player you've coached or a player you played with, that first player that reminds you of. So it could come out some crazy stories, but let's see what's coming out of the box. Let me help you here. There's just some details on how to check your package, which we'll share on social media. Right.
Mixed nuts,
okay. No, check each one out and...
I'm actually not sure.
I feel like Herschel Gibbs could be probably all of these then, all of these. But who's the nuttiest guy you've ever played with in or coached in your... Just crazy that you're going like this guy. Great player, but an absolute nutter.
He probably was. It's probably actually. I know this very well. I know him from way before he was a cricketer. He was a footballer who was playing in our district, and he was playing for a club there, and it was only when he was meant to Bishops that he wasn't allowed to play there anymore because his dad and his Herman used to do the reporting at the football field. So. You're right. Probably he'll agree.
While we're at the nuttiest cricket of Herschel Gibbs, like, it's quite a well-known story, but a certain Vincent Barnes was apparently the person that was in the bar, not with him, but collecting him and fetching him from the bar at the early hours of the morning of that 4-3-8 game. Fiction or...
Yeah, it's a hell of a story.
We're here for that.
I think we had a team dinner that evening, because it was the, you know, the series was 2-2.
Mm.
We'd just come from Durban. And so tomorrow we're playing the final.
Mm.
We had come from Australia. Where we had lost. And now we've come here, we lost the test series against Australia. But now we're in fact, the game at Durban we should have won. We should have been 3-1 up. And but it's 2-2 and it's a big game. Day game. 12th of March 2006. biggest game ever. And I think we had a team dinner. I'm not sure. But anyway, Hurst got up and just sat at the bar and we all left. And then Graham gave me a call and said, Vin, can you go in? Herschel's still at the bar there. So I went down and I said, listen, Hersh, tomorrow's a day game. You know, we're leaving early. So, you know, then he said, no, I'm okay. We went back to my room. Then I heard that he's still at the bar. I went down again. Hersh, you know, he came. Look, I don't know what time you got this room, but I did go down a couple of times to just remind him, listen here, come on, you know, we got this big game tomorrow. And,
you were the assistant coach at the time of the Brothers. Yeah.
Mickey was a coach.
Yeah.
So next morning, we get to breakfast. I see him sitting alone, so I go up and I sit next to him and I say, listen, last night wasn't, you know, that was an honor, you know. Playing a day game was such a big game. We need to beat these guys. And we can. And we know we can beat them.
Mm.
As strong as Australia were.
Mm.
But then, and I said, listen, but either you tell Mickey what happened or I tell Mickey, you decide. No, I'll tell Mickey, sir. He scores 174. Scores 174. I said, Mickey said, but maybe you should sit at 2:30 a.m. at the bar a night before the game and scores 100 like that for us. But yeah, look, it was, that's the type of person Herschel was. You know, Herschel is, he's probably the most talented cricketer that we, he was one of the most talented sportsmen that we
know.
He could play anything. He was an unbelievable soccer player, rugby player, and cricketer. There's a lot that people don't know about him, where how hard he works.
Mm.
You know, he's, at times I watch his tweets, you know, he's pretty bitter about certain things.
Mm.
But the one thing that I know in the time that when I was at the protest and he was there was how hard he worked.
Mm.
You know, works exceptionally hard. And leading up to World Cup, you stop, no drinking.
Mm.
Like 6 weeks before that, a couple of months before that, no drinking, just works damn. All he was interested in his entire career was a gold medal around his neck, which was a World Cup gold medal.
Mm.
You know, there's so many times I've got 2 medals at home that he's when he got man of the match and he just left it there to see, you know. So he's, nah.
So I'm not interested.
Yeah. I want that gold medal.
That elite mentality, yeah.
Yeah, no, he worked exceptionally hard. Mm. He wouldn't play a shot, if he plays a shot and he's hit the ball, I remember a game where we played against EP. So Mfaneko Nkam, Karnat Kruger, Nanti Hayward. So it was like this big build up to the game where Gary and Hersh were batting. And this is the Western Province against EP. And he hit Karnat Kruger into the north stand. High up into the north stand. Not into the stand.
Yeah.
Into the suites.
Wow.
I mean, a shot that you go, how did he do that?
Yeah.
But it's a shot he practices.
Mm.
You know, he doesn't play that shot. He won't sweep or lap or if he doesn't practice it. He practices all his shots and when he plays it in a game, he's actually practicing.
Mm.
You know, he firmly always believed to say work very, very hard. He and Gary are probably the hardest working cricketers I know.
I've seen him in the gym. Like we've got similar gym routines. So, the only difference is that his workout actually works. But anyway, Vin, next thing coming out of the box here.
Oh no!
We've got some Nivea moisturizer cream, I think it is. Who does that remind you of? He was always like clean. He was like always like smooth. Yeah. Player you coached or played with or somebody like that.
It's probably also Ursh. I mean, he was the smoothest around. I mean, the smoothest with when it comes to the way he dressed, way, you know, way he ate.
Is that important to him?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's probably him as well. I mean, yeah. It's, I mean, he was always smart. Yeah. He was well dressed. Yeah, probably him as well.
I'd actually say it was more like you actually, because you're always well kept. You maintained. You're 66.
Yeah.
If I may reveal your age, it is on Crick Info. If anybody wants to check, I'm not revealing your age, but shit, you're in bloody good nick for 66. We should only be so lucky. Right, next item, Evan.
Oh my word! What's this? Okay,
it's a manscaper.
It's a groomy.
Yeah. So who is always looking well groomed and obsessed with their look?
I'll go Riza Hendricks.
Riza, okay, yeah.
Yeah. No, Riza was, I really met Riza when I just, I'd left the Proteas. I was the high performance manager. So my first tour was an emerging tour.
Mm.
So we had this emerging quadrangular, us Australia, New Zealand, in India.
Oh, I missed those back in the day. They were so good.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, it was such a good. And Riza was, that's the first time I actually met Riza. And he scored 700 odd runs, so two double hundreds. I mean, he was unbelievable, actually. But what I did notice about him is always well groomed.
Well put together.
And still today. I mean,
still today.
If you're watching, as the trends, you watch all the trends. And I saw, what's his name? David Beckham had the style. And he had the same sort of style. So, I think he's still, I mean, he's well groomed. And he looks after himself. So.
No, he's one of the smoothest guys around. Eh? Let's see what else we've got. What have we got here?
What's that?
Okay, so an egg timer. This is basically part of the early detection, is this whole kind of checking your package takes a total of 10 minutes. It's 10 minutes out of your time that could potentially lead to early detection of it. So I'm not going to say what can be done in 10 minutes, but who was always late? I'm going to throw the question.
Oh, you. My word.
Who was always late for the bus and got those fines back in the day?
Makaya, there was a couple of times. Makaya was late. So, yeah,
that's surprising actually, because he was so disciplined in pretty much his routine.
You could tell him, listen, you've got to be, bus leaves at 10.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just forget about it.
Yeah. He was talking to the staff at the reception.
Lucky, where are you?
Yeah.
We're leaving. Where are you? I was coaching on a 19 side. Jonathan Trott was playing on a 19 side. Anyway, and Andrew Patrick were in on a 19 side. We drove away, had to get a taxi to the ground because they were late. So, but yeah, look, I mean, I think discipline is pretty good.
So I'm going to go with a bit of a different question than what we asked Dave Callahan about this one. It was like, who was the one player that was such a talented player, but wouldn't ever look themselves in the mirror and say, like, I need to work harder, but they didn't fulfill their talent and had all the talent in the world, but just didn't look themselves in the mirror and say, okay, let me sort my own shit out.
Sure. These are tough questions, sir.
This is the biggest man in cricket. This is not some some fly-by-night thing. We go deep here.
I think, if I look back at the Proteas, I think if I look at the bowling attack, I think the guy that probably underachieved, and I don't think it's necessarily his work ethics. Mm. It's more his role he played in the team was Morne Morkel. I felt that Morne Morkel should have achieved a lot more wickets.
Mm.
If I the one day I actually got Morne Morkel and said, right, come.
Mm.
You're all the batters. They're standing in front of you now. I said, guys, who do you not enjoy facing at Nets? And it's more and more. I mean, some of the guys would come say, you know, we put up the board, like, who's batting where? How come we always facing more and more? You know, and they don't enjoy facing. But he had to believe that, how dangerous he was as a bowler and how unbelievably he was as a bowler. He was quite hard on himself. And sometimes that being hard on yourself is not, you know, you always, Dale was different. I knew Dale, I just need to upset him. Or he need to be upset in the field and I'll see the best, you know, come on, better nick a ball to third man there. Yeah. No third man, nick the ball there. Two in a row, guy, this guy's going to kill you now. You know, that's when you get the best out of those guys.
Yeah.
Just a pre-match routine used to be, Dale, you see this glove on my hand, try and break it, you know. So just, well, give me six balls off your fastest. And then that gets him going, you know. Just felt, and he was very simple, very simple. Dale was very simple in his plans. I swing the ball away. I can bowl 140 plus. This is what I'm going to do. I want those three guys at the back in the gully to catch balls and keep her. It was very simple in his. I almost felt that at times with Mornay, especially when we had a break, and Mornay comes back, then there's some new ideas, you know. So I felt that. I think probably Mornay.
I tend to agree there. I think that's. I think you beautifully put it.
Yeah.
He almost played within himself because he didn't believe how fearsome he was.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy that swings a ball back into you. Mm. He doesn't swing a ball away. To right hand, he swung a ball back in. But the bounce he gets.
Yeah.
And he's bowling 140 plus. Yeah. I mean, I spoke to Ash, the one bowler Ash hated batting against was Armisen. Mm. You know, he just couldn't go forward to Armisen.
Yeah.
She's permanently on the back. And I know he didn't enjoy batting against Armisen.
Mm.
So here's a tall guy who can swing the ball.
Mm.
And he's bowls quick. You know. And interesting enough, I'm going to bring up Makaya. Because I think Makaya didn't back himself as much as he should have.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. So we had this, the whole change of the guard conversation in Pakistan. 2007, I was in my room and playing in Pakistan, Karachi, and Graham called me and said, I need you to come down here. Myself and me could be sitting in the restaurant, went downstairs, sat down, and the conversation was, we need to take 20 wickets. We're not taking 20 wickets. A bowling attack was Makaya, Polly, Andre Nal. So those were your three frontline attack bowlers in the squad. We had Morning Walker and Dale Steyn. And Dale had played a couple of games. So we now wanted to go the route of Makaya, Dale, Mornay, and possibly another if we're going to play. But we also had Kellis in the side, so Kellis bowls.
Mm.
But those were the three frontline teams. We wanted to go that route. And I was oh my word.
Yeah.
You're going to tell Sean Pollock he's not playing. Yeah. Who's going to do that? You know? Don't worry, we'll sort that. So, first test, and then morning of the game, Mornay had gone over his ankle in the footholds the day before. And Mornay comes, does a fitness test, fails fitness test. So, oh my word, okay. Right, Polly's back. No. And I know Graham liked Nala's aggression. He always liked Nala in the squad, and I'm sorry, in the team. And so he brings Nala in. So our attack is Makaya, Dale, Andre Nal. That's attack. With Kellis, Paul Harris. So now I'm looking at the attack and I'm thinking, all these guys want one wickets. You know, even if it was Mornay playing, we've got three bowlers, all they want is wickets. Makaya was allowed to be like that because he bowled short most of his career. You know, so. And that's what his role, attack. You go, take wickets. Your role is not to come and bowl and hold it end up, but you're going to attack. And so now I'm going, okay, with this attack, you know, the team could be 40 without loss after 8 overs, but 70 for 4 with this attack, because that's what they did. You know, they took wickets. So, it was a I know we're off the point here, but no, such a duff.
Such a great story.
Such a duff.
Duffs. How do you tell these guys, these legends of the game?
And I remember we they wanted to toss and went to bat. And Sean came up to me and said, can we go to Nesk because he wanted some throwdowns? And all I wanted to do, whenever we bowled, just watch our bowlers. So it was a bit difficult to, I couldn't, well, I'm not going to say no to you.
Yeah.
So we went to the net, was throwing at the net, and we were bowling. And
by the way, you're answering our next thing about this, because that's a great story about throwdowns. Tennis balls, carry on.
So it was such a tough, it was a tough period, I think, for Sean, you know, now he's reached a point where he wasn't taking a lot of wickets. We now want to go the route with Mornay, Dale and Makaya.
Yeah.
That was the route. And I'm going to come back to Makaya, because now Makaya is the senior bowler. For years he was, from the time I got involved, and I got involved with the Proteas just after the World Cup. Just after the England tour, after the World Cup, I got involved. And when I got there, it was the bowling attack was basically Makaya, Dale. Makaya, Sean, Nella, Andrew Hall was there. Here was now the whole change of the Guardian now. And so I went to Makaya, and this is why I'm coming back to Makaya. And he said, Makaya, listen, you now have got the senior role now here. Okay. For years, you know, you've got all these guys around you. And my relationship with Makaya was quite interesting. When I got involved with the Proteas, I didn't know him. I didn't know him. I didn't know Sean. I didn't know Lance Klusener. Sorry, Lance was also with us. So I had to establish relationship. All the other guys I'd worked with, either at Western Province, because we had about five or six of the provincial Western Province players there. So so now I'm saying, Mackie, I need you now to take charge. You know, I always enjoyed having a leader of the pack on the field.
Yeah.
You know, even if he's bowling crap, you know,
you still
I need you to go to put your arm around a bowler and lift him when he's not bowling well. That's what I need you to do. So the first game we played back home, we played in Durban, and I know Sean always used to enjoy bowling from the bottom because of the extra bounce going up. Dale Steyn bowls from that side, and he bowls down. So go, Mackie, you're the man here. You decide. You decide what side you want to bowl from, you know. No. You know, so it's
too it's, nice rather than
But he was happy to please people, but so because I always felt that he's such a dangerous bowler, and you could give him the ball at any stage, and you're going to get the same man running in there, whether you know he had Fitness just all this energy in his tank, and you whether it's his third spell late afternoon, you'd get that 100% out of him, you know, and I always felt that he sort of backed off. He didn't maybe at times back himself enough.
Interesting. I mean, he's such a loud character in the changing room, but sometimes guys are
sometimes it masks.
It's masks, yeah.
Sometimes it also masks insecurity. It doesn't mean that, you know, I've had a great relationship with him, and we've he's won us games, and he's got the most important single ever.
that must have been crazy back then. So, Vinya, thanks for sharing those stories with us. I mean, there's some great stories that come out of each of these, and we just remind people to check our social media channels and check out the information of how to check your package. It's been a wonderful campaign. We've seen it across social media as well. Look at your Takealot package this month, a little more carefully, and check your own package out. So thanks for sharing those stories with us. It's been absolutely great. I wanted to just come to just something quickly. And you mentioned your football career, and you were a great player back in your day, right? But I wanted to ask you something, because you probably one of 17 Manchester City supporters in the country, in South Africa. How did that love of Manchester City come about? I've always been interested, and I've never actually asked you this in any private conversations I've had with you.
I'm going back now to 1969. So we, back then, the FA Cup final was played on a Saturday, and because it was on TV, the final would be played as a movie on the Monday evening. after the Saturday.
Yeah.
So my dad took us to the movies, and we'd go and watch the game at the movies. So
at the movie house.
At the movie house. Oh, yeah. Wow, yeah. Okay. Jesus. So, but because there was no TV, so you.
Sounds amazing, even in this day and age.
There wasn't TV in our country.
Yeah.
So, they were playing with Leicester City, and I know that Manchester City had won the game. So my brother and I with my dad, and I said, were you supporting? I don't think you knew who had played in the final. So I said, I'm supporting Manchester City. And it was just there. It just stuck. You know, it just stuck. And ever since then, I mean, I've just, you know, I mean, went through pretty hectic times with the roller coaster ride to support Manchester City. I got relegated a few times. Yeah. I had to listen to their win promotion on the radio. I couldn't watch it on TV.
Yeah.
Win promotion. And that's where it started. And it just grew and grew. And we went to, when City moved from
Main Road
to the Etihad, which was back then was the City of Manchester, because it was used for the Commonwealth Games. Mm. I was in England at the time. We were on a coaching conference, and Ashwell was playing. Ashwell and Eugene was playing up north, and Ashwell was playing in the Lancashire area. So we were now in Manchester, and that was the last period of Maynard was now closed, and it's now low cost housing, I think. But anyway, so we went to the stadium, and they were digging up the turf.
Wow.
So we walked in, and I watched it, and Ashwell said, we're from South Africa, as a Manchester City sport. And the guy said, would you like a piece of this turf?
Yeah.
So I said, okay.
No ways.
So he gave me a piece of the turf, and I put it in a black bag. We took it back to where Ashwell was staying. But the guy there said, listen, you're going to have a problem getting through immigration with the stuff. So I left it there, and it's still in his garden. So yeah, that's where it all started.
Oh, that's great.
And then...
so you're not one of the new supporters.
Let me tell you, I've got some shirts there dating back in the 70s and 80s.
But you've been back, you've been to the Etihad as well now.
Yeah, I was the Etihad.
Amazing.
The first game I watched at the Etihad was against Chelsea. We beat Chelsea that day, and Carlos Tevez scored. So.
Lovely.
So I've got a lot of Ashwell's mates who he introduced me to. They're all Manchester. So
I thought Ashwell was only friendly with Liverpool supporters, but you've actually gone into a partnership with Ash. Actually, I wanted to just ask you that about quickly. The Barnes Prince Academy. I mean, those are two surnames synonymous with cricket. One batter, one bowler. It seems like the perfect match. Just talk to us about that and what you're doing with the academy.
Yeah, so we started a foundation because we felt that both of us felt that he was now stopped playing. He wasn't coaching. I had retired. We felt that we wanted to give back to the community. We knew there was a need for that. There was a lot of people around us that wanted to support it. So we started this the foundation. There were about seven of us, myself and Ashwell, our wives and a couple of friends. We started and that kicked off actually unbelievably well. You know, it was during COVID also, so we had we were exposed now to a side that I'd never seen never had an experience before, you know, going into schools like Bokmakiri Primary School, where we went there during COVID actually, and the sad thing about it is that it was on a Saturday, so all the kids at the school there were doing extra classes, doing maths, English, and we had a braai, so we had a braai for them, and then they were playing netball and. The girls were playing netball and the guys were kicking around. And we then identified two. We asked the school to identify two other students that we could take from primary school into high school, which we did. And we're still supporting them.
From a bursary point of view, support funding. So we
put them into school and they're doing exceptionally well.
Amazing.
Yeah, we just had I think it was late January, we met them just to Where are they doing what they're doing?
Is it a cricket thing or is it just a general?
No, the guy plays cricket. No, it was just a general thing. Okay. It wasn't, I need to go and play cricket there and take me to a cricket school.
Yeah.
Initially, we thought about it, but then they came back and the names they gave us, okay, here we go. And they're doing exceptionally well at school, academically and obviously in their sport. So those were some of them. We've done so. There's been so many projects that we were involved in.
Yeah.
We helped with people wanting to do coaching overseas and stuff like that.
Awesome.
But then Nashville got involved with the protests. Mm-hmm. So, and I got involved with the schools.
Yeah.
So it's sort of taken a bit of a backseat. Mm-hmm. The academy as well, we were running until, you know, this year it was a bit low-key. We got a couple of coaches who coached for us, with us.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, look, it was a bit low-key this past summer because both Ash and I were extremely busy. Ashville was hardly around, so. But I saw Ash yesterday. We had a meeting yesterday morning, and
nice.
We want to start. And yeah, we've got some great ideas. The people that's involved with us got some great ideas, you know.
You can't do everything yourselves, you know.
Yeah, with Ashville's wife passing away, you know, and a bit ago. You know, we almost identified there's another area that we could sort of
get support on.
Yeah, correct. Support cancer.
Mm.
So Debbie, my wife, Debbie, she's quite heavily involved. She's now want to get this project going again.
Fantastic, yeah.
So that's where we are.
And we're always supported from the Biggest Man in Cricket. We've had Ash on here. He's our first guest. We've evolved since then. We've now got partners. All of a sudden got a manscaper in front of us. Somehow we've developed. We didn't think we'd get there, but listen, Vin, I mean, I feel like we've like missed out on a couple of things, but we could be here all night, but we do have to come to an end here. We do have a thing called the declaration, which is the final thing we do in the podcast. And it's six questions that we just throw at you and just give us a pretty quick answer. A movie about your life. Who's the actor that plays you?
Brad Pitt. Richard Gere.
Richard Gere plays me,
yeah.
Ageless, just aged like a fine wine, eh? Love it. Your favorite non-cricket sportsman?
Non-cricket?
Yeah.
Tiger Woods.
Tiger. Not his driving skills. Right. One batsman in your bowling career that you thought you could never get out.
That's very difficult, actually.
To be fair, you had an average of 11, so there weren't many of those that you would...
I think the latter stage of my career, I was taught a lesson in my first game at the Wanderers by a James Cook.
James
Cook. But interestingly enough, I played in the finals, because we played a couple of games against him, a couple of vessels. I felt... Then I always, in my career, bowling over the wicket to a left-hander, you know, I didn't enjoy bowling around the wicket because I swung over back into a left-hander. So when you play against high-quality batters, like Gary or some of the Kepler, you know, if you err in your lines, I mean, they punish you. and funny, okay, I will say this though. Arun Logat was an exceptional cricketer.
Really?
Unbelievable cricketer. I mean, he bowled probably about 130. All-rounder, proper all-rounder.
Yeah.
I found him to be probably one of my...
Interesting.
Probably one of my most difficult opponents.
Very interesting. One law in cricket that you'd change if you were in the top brass? I mean, you're close to the top brass, but if you actually were in the top brass?
Word. There's a lot of laws that change. A lot of laws have changed over the years.
Which irritates you with that.
I'm just looking at the IPL now. The DRS for wides and stuff like that. It's such an irritation. And the reason why was the other day. We waited about 7 minutes for a wide to be called. I think that's it. You just, my problem with umpiring and refereeing the VAR is that they stop becoming proper umpires and proper refs. Refs at the moment can make mistakes because they know it can be referred.
Mm.
And similarly with it also exposes umpires, the ones who get it a lot wrong. And they move out to the panel.
We had an interesting chat to Maria Erasmus about it. It was one of the favorite episodes that we've done here with just exactly that. You know, has technology dumbed down umpires effectively? Yeah. You know, and they.
So a few weeks ago, there's an FA Cup match and there's no VAR in the game. And the referee absolutely stuffs up the game. He just oversees so many things because I think they go into the game. You know, you as umpire, you go, because you know you got two referrals, and the batter goes, you know, and they change of no, change, not that, you know.
Okay.
But the ones that didn't take me, no, believe me, I'm 100% for technology, and it has helped the game, but like wides, not coming down. Just waste a lot of time.
Two more questions. Best captain that you've worked with, that you've coached under?
Graham Smith. Yes. Yeah, he's, look, I mean, I think anyone who played under Graham will say the same thing. It's quite interesting because my relationship with Graham goes back to that Pakistan under 90 tour. He was 17 on that tour. But already then, he got injured on the tour and couldn't play. But already then you could see, you know, the just being off the field, how strong he was as a 17-year-old. I remember Arthur Turner was CEO at the time. Then called me the one day in the office and said, there's a youngster called Graham Smith. His agent wants to know if you want to sign him. He said, Arthur, close your eyes, sign this boy.
Yeah.
This is something special.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I got involved with the Proteas, I mean, he was now just taken over captaincy of the Proteas. And there was still a little, obviously, he had taken over from Pollock. There was obviously this bit of needle still around. I sensed it when I got there.
Yeah.
You know, there was a Pollock faction that Smith. But let me tell you, that man took his team and they walked through walls with him.
Yeah.
You know, he had that ability to like, if you take the 4-3-8 game, just the 4-3-8 game, I mean, there's no ways that he believed that we could have, there's no ways that he didn't believe that we could do that.
Yeah.
You know, he goes out there and the way he plays, some of the games you play, you know, when you chase that awkward total in the fourth innings. On a turning track, and you've got to chase 220 to win. And he gets 100.
You get 100, yeah.
He gets 100. He goes out there and he plays.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, it's also making those tough decisions. You know, you got to think about it. You're one of the world's best cricketers. You know, you're dropping him. And you're basically saying, listen, my mate, it's the end of your career. Those are tough, tough decisions to make. And, you know, so, yeah, Graham Smith.
Great, And then final question, this is a big question then. Okay, 2027 next year comes around. You've got two choices, right? And only one can happen. Proteas win the 50-over World Cup on home soil. Or Manchester City win the treble. Champions League, the league, actually the quadruple. The league, Champions League, League Cup and FA Cup. What's your choice?
South Africa winning 50-over World Cup, and I'm only saying that because they've won a treble. I mean, they've won a treble. I was in Istanbul when they won the Champions League.
Yeah.
So they won the FA Cup, they won the league, and they won they won a treble.
Yeah.
So I've seen that happen. So that's an easy one. No, but look, I mean, if it hadn't happened, the thing about I always say this to so many, like my brother who's Liverpool crazy. I said, Colin, you got to understand one thing, that you have absolutely no control over what goes on there. Selections, the way they play, post-match, absolutely nothing. You know, so if your team wins, get upset, let it hurt, and then move on. Because there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's total uncontrollable.
Yeah.
Being at World Cups, we are wars, which are now controllables.
Mm.
You know how much it hurts. You know, I've been there. And it hurts. You know, I mean, I've been in change rooms. I've been in hotels. I've been in the buses where it's absolutely deathly silence. And you just know people are hurting. I'd like to see that in my lifetime. I'd like to see them in 50 over World Cup.
Amazing. That would be a great, well-deserved thing. It's for your mate, Shooks, as well. I mean, that you guys are obviously close. You've had your career paths have kind of taken a similar trajectory, just at maybe different times. But you're close to Shooks, eh? I mean, he's been part of your journey as well. And
yeah, look, I mean, I was fortunate that the last few years of my role as high performance manager at Cricket Savvy, I had great coaches there. Shukri, Neil Mack. I mean, these guys were excellent coaches working as consultants. And that's where, obviously, with Shukri taking over the under-19s National Academy, moving on to South Africa and eventually on to the... So, yeah, look, I really do hope that they, you know, I mean, they came a little close to the T20. I mean, I played golf with Shooks the other day, and, you know, they didn't expect that. That game against New Zealand, they didn't expect it. You know, it's like, where did this come from? I mean, they'd beaten New Zealand comfortably in the games before that. But yeah, that's what I'm...
My thing, and I'm saying it directly to the camera, and I've said it in a previous episode, it's all priming ourselves for the 2027 Cricket World Cup. We're going to win it on home soil, Ben. We're going to have, I know you don't really drink, but and Shooks doesn't drink. We're going to down a Powerade or something when it does happen. But, you know, it's going to be an incredible occasion. We can't wait for it. I'm the biggest man in cricket. Hopefully we'll be there, and we'll be over 100,000 subscribers hopefully by then. So if you're watching this podcast now, please do like and subscribe. It's the perfect time to do that. Join in as we grow this podcast journey. We're going to be there at the 2027 World Cup supporting the Proteas. Having all the world stars on the stage in South Africa is going to be incredible. Vinnie Barnes is going to be in the President's Suite and at Newlands and in the long room at Wanderers, because that's where the VIP is. Maybe the biggest man in cricket will get a suite during the World Cup. We'll be that big. But and you're always welcome there to come and have a drink with us. Vern, it's been absolutely amazing to chat, and thank you for sharing your story with us. It's quite a unique story in South African cricket. I see when we go around the respect that you have in the industry, and it's well deserved, and really thank you for your service to cricket in the country. It's been incredible. You've been part of creating absolute superstars. Sometimes the coaches don't get that credit, but yeah, we like to give the credit where it's due. And thanks very much. You look incredible for a young 66-year-old involved in the next generation coming through school. So we look forward to seeing you again on the show, hopefully one day soon. And then all the best, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Steph. Cheers, man. Thank you.
And you've got a manscaper now to go home with as well.